Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us by emailing us at thechampionshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, my name's Thomas. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, a website, unsurprisingly, about Wolverhampton Wanderers, and you can reach me on Twitter at wolvesblog and at facebook.com/wolvesblog.
Hi, I'm Matt Cutler. I am an Aston Villa fan, a sport business journalist by trade. You can find me at Matty Cutler on Twitter. I'm also the founder of the SB Weekly podcast, which you can find at SB Weekly podcast also on Twitter.
Okay, thanks for joining us today, guys. We'll start on making a round where each of us have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. We'll start with you, Thomas. A good win on Thursday. Paul Lambert's first win in charge, I think. So you must be feeling slightly more positive than you were last time you came on. How are you currently feeling about Wolves?
I should like to say I'm feeling better after getting that win in the bag. It's been a long time coming. I felt incredibly low the weekend before after losing to Sheffield Wednesday. A really terrible performance. So we really needed that. Not a lot's really happened. It was a pretty low profile week. We just knew we were coming into this game, and we knew because of how the fixtures had worked out. With Wigan having won the previous week, beating Huddersfield in the week, then we knew that if we lost, basically, we were going to slip back into the bottom three. So avoiding defeat was a big thing, but then when QPR went down to 10 men, obviously that changed the perspective of the game. We needed to go on and win it, and thankfully we did that quite convincingly. It looked like being for a long time because we got two goals up, should have killed it off with a third, fourth and even a fifth maybe, but we didn't do that. And then QPR got a goal from a set piece, sloppy goal to give away, and then they threw the kitchen sink at us. So it ended up being a scruffy win, but any win will do for us. Just hope that it's a building block to start something, because we've only been going in one direction for a long time, and we need to address that, because I certainly don't think we can adopt the mindset that we're too good to go down, because we're not too good to go down. So good week, really, because it looked like we were going to, we're in for a long struggle after the Sheffield Wednesday game, but we've turned it round, so hopefully better things lie ahead.
Yeah, it does look like a much-needed win after nine games without one. Do you think that this is a good opportunity to kick on now? I mean, your upcoming fixtures, you've got Fulham at home, Cardiff and Nottingham Forest away, and then Bristol City, QPR before the new year. Do you think that this month could be a big one for Wolves in terms of climbing out of danger?
I think it's got to be. It's got to be, because, like you say, those fixtures, you couldn't probably ask for much better ones. Like you guys, that old cliche, there's no easy games in the Championship because there's about a line of litmus paper between most of the teams. But those look like decent fixtures on paper. We've got to put a run together. That's exactly what we'll be looking to do. I would expect that we'll be spending some money in January. So it would be nice to be in a position to attract certain players, because if we're at the bottom of the tail end of the Championship, we're not going to be able to attract a decent caliber of player. Whereas if we've managed to get two or three more wins in December, get up to that sort of mid-table area where you think, well, maybe with a decent run we might do something, you might be able to attract a better caliber of player. So that's on my mind. But I think primarily what we've got to do is just be looking at staying up. Actually, funnily, and it's a bit of a clang this one, but when Paul Lambert was brought in, he actually invited a selection of the bloggers and local sort of fan sites to come and meet him. And he gave us 2 hours of his time down at the training ground, which was really good. And he actually asked us firsthand what our, you know, expectations were. And everyone just, most people were sort of realistic in what we were inheriting. So we just need to stay up this year and you know, and look to build something moving ahead for next year. So I think that's realistically what we've got to do, you know, baby steps, get away from there. So any, as long as we stay up this season, that's what I'll be, what I'm aiming for.
Thomas, sorry, how did you find Paul Lambert on first impressions? What did you think of him?
Well, he's a really, really nice guy. I mean, first and foremost, just couldn't have been more sort of low profile. Walked in, shook everyone's hands, very warmly greeted everyone. I think he said during his time out after he left Villa, he'd spent a lot of time going around Germany, and he'd been at Dortmund, been at Bayern Munich, been Barcelona and Real Madrid, and just basically absorbing how these clubs are run and how the managers are working. And he said the thing that he took from his time at Villa that is he took too much burden on things. You know, he took too much on his shoulders, felt too much pressure, you know, acted very sort of erratically and aggressively, where he's sort of learned to calm down a bit. So he said one of the things he learned was the importance of running the whole football club, not just about what he can influence the team, but how he can influence the whole club. So I think inviting us down was kind of an effort to sort of galvanise the support a little bit, and then also for him to get an idea of what the types of thing we were hoping to see from him. And even, you know, he asked us opinions on certain players we liked and didn't like and stuff like that. So, yeah, he was very open, very engaging. He said, you know, he's got very straightforward ideas about football. He said he doesn't think it's rocket science, which isn't always what you want to hear, because I think these days football fans want to hear managers with big ideas and philosophies and stuff like that. But I think he's got a very clear idea. And I think in the Championship, he's proven, because of what he was able to do with Norwich, and I think he did a pretty decent job with Blackburn last season. So he's a bit of I do think he's a bit of a no-frills sort of pragmatic kind of thinking manager. So yeah, I wouldn't say he did a lot to change my opinion of him before I met him, but he seems like a good guy. And I think he's a, like I said to Jake after we sacked Walter Zenger, I felt we needed that safe pair of hands appointment, and I think that's exactly what he is. He's a safe pair of hands appointment.
Yeah, just moving on to you now, Matt. Obviously, it was disappointing at the weekend where you got your first loss under Steve Bruce, but I'm guessing you're a lot more positive about Aston Villa since the managerial change than you were beforehand. What were your thoughts on the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a kind of a small blip on a kind of a positive few weeks and months for us under Steve Bruce. It was funny that the Leeds game was a very, very funny game. We've been, you know, Villa have not been playing well this season. You know, it doesn't take me to tell anyone that. And we've been really, really improving the way we played, particularly when we played away at Brighton, which I think was two weeks ago now on the Friday night, which I live in London, so I went down to see it. And we played really well. And I was speaking to a few Brighton fans when I was there on the train and things like that. And they were like saying that Villa were the best team that they've played all season, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and I definitely saw that firsthand. And yet we, you know, playing Leeds, on Saturday evening, we seemed a completely different team. It didn't help that Grealish didn't play or only played the last 20 minutes. You know, Villa are a very, very different team when he's playing. A lot more creative, a lot more confident on the ball. Leeds kind of sat back and they're almost inviting us to attack them. Yet, everyone seemed a little bit off. So I don't quite know. The momentum seemed to just not go into that Leeds game. Jonathan Codger, who, you know, we've been really pinning our hopes on since he signed from Bristol City, he just didn't seem too interested in the game. You know, he had a few chances on the ball, didn't seem to be comfortable. So I don't quite know what went wrong. Steve Bruce seems pretty kind of calm about it, but to be honest, Leeds were on a good run, but they were there for the taking, and I just think Steve Bruce maybe got his tactics a bit wrong, or didn't prepare the guys enough in advance. And also bearing in mind that Leeds played in midweek, you know, and I think maybe went to extra time or at least played a pretty serious game against Liverpool. Yeah, I mean, I don't quite know the answer. Don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, looking at the league table, Aston Villa have only lost 4 games all season, which is fewer than Newcastle and Reading. I think only Brighton have lost fewer games. So for me, as an outsider looking in, it seems that Aston Villa are on the verge of going on a good run and sort of cementing themselves in that playoff spot. It's just small margins at the moment that is preventing them from doing so. Do you think that's a fair reflection on the whole in recent weeks under Steve Bruce? I mean, you've been unbeaten, but you've not been putting a run of wins together. Do you think it's only a matter of time before that does happen?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. And our defence seems to be pulling together now. You know, our fullbacks, Jordan Mavi is playing very well. And Alan Hutton, I was reading on Twitter, he got a bit of stick for how he played against Leeds, but I thought he was pretty solid. You know, he's a bit of an old timer. You know, he's been around the block for a fair few years now, and he seems to have a solid game. And James Chester and Tommy Elphick, who's back in the team now, having been injured, I think we've got solid back four. It's the goalkeeper who I don't want to kind of preempt what the conversation we're going across the next kind of hour or so, but I think the goalkeeping area is something we need to address in the transfer window. We conceded 2 goals against Leeds, and the first one was a cross that's come in, and Gallini, who's our first team goalkeeper, he flapped at it, and crosses have been a real bugbear of his since he signed. And to be honest, mistakes more generally, we've lost way more points than we should have due to goalkeeping errors. So I guess, yeah, I think we've got Wigan coming up next weekend, and Wigan are languishing in the relegation zone. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being slightly depressive about the whole thing, just off the back of a loss. Things are looking up, that's to say the least. Even though it didn't sound like that from the last 10 minutes of me ranting.
Just moving on to Newcastle now. Obviously, we've not had the best week in recent history. We've lost 3 games now in a row. It's not great, but I think it's not for bad performances. I think during the week I started there against Hull, we dominated a Premier League team for nearly 120 minutes, and we were quite stupid to give away the lead once we had it, especially as they had 10 men. I think we dominated the game well. I think Benitez is right after the game saying that we failed to manage the situation, and that's something that we're going to learn with experience. Still a very young team, and there's only been 19 games this season. There's a lot of work still to do. We're far from where we want to be, but we're going in the right direction. I think it was a positive on the whole with that whole game. I'm not sure we would have got much further in the cup even if we'd have beaten Hull anyway. So it was, I guess, a missed opportunity to go to a semi-final, but it's something that we're going to have to move on for. We want to get promoted first and foremost, so that has to be our main goal. So that was disappointing on the night, but it's not something I'm going to look back on and be too disappointed at. Then we moved on to Friday's game, and that was definitely an eventful game for many a different reason. I don't really like criticising referees, but it's difficult not to in this game. He got a lot of decisions wrong, not only for Newcastle. He got decisions wrong for Nottingham Forest as well. It wasn't a great game. It was just a major decision seemed to go against Newcastle in this one. We'll start of the red card to John Joe Shelby. It's probably a fair red card. I've seen worse kickouts, but he definitely did kick out, and it's difficult to argue with that. I think Lansbury didn't come out of that looking well himself. I think Benitez was very angry with his own reaction and his own actions. I think he sort of provoked Shelby, and he could have easily seen red as well. You see situations like this in a lot of games, and at the time a yellow to both players could have been fair, but I'm not going to be too critical of that red card. I think the problem with this is that it wasn't a penalty. I think if you read the rules, if there's a foul off the ball, you give a drop ball, you don't give a penalty. But the penalty was saved anyway, so that wasn't a big talking issue. And then we had the disallowed goal from Kieran Clarke, which I think probably shouldn't have been disallowed. I don't see what's wrong with that. Kieran Clarke himself was held a few minutes earlier, and we didn't get a penalty for that, and I didn't see the difference between the two incidents. I think if you give a penalty, if you don't give a penalty for Newcastle, you can't give a foul against us for that goal, so I think that should have been allowed. And then we take the lead, and I think with 10 men, we were still the better team in that game. I thought with 10 men, we could have went on and won it. We got the goal through Matt Ritchie, who hasn't scored recently, and I thought we were going to push on then. And then it was just such another stupid decision from the referee. I think this one was the big talking point. Firstly, I don't think it was a penalty. I think Lansbury's already going over. He's looking for the foul. Paul Dummett does put his hands on him, but I don't think it's enough for a foul. And even if you do give that penalty, you can't give the red card. They've changed the rules. They've made it so you don't do the double punishment. You don't give the red and the penalty. But that's exactly what that referee did. And then Carl Darlow saved that as well. We went in 1-0. It was an extraordinary half of football. But at that point, you can't win a game with 9 men. The physical demands of it are impossible. We gave it a good go. We played very well in the second half. We did everything we could. And it took them till the 85th minute to get that winning goal. There was talk about the first goal being offside, which I guess there's an argument for that as well. It was just a very bad game. But it was. I thought we played well with 9 men, all things going. I think Benitez did. He didn't go to defend. He went to a 4-3-1, I think it was. And a lot of managers would have just packed the box and sort of got men behind the ball. But I think Benitez tried to play it quite well. And I think that sort of did keep us in the game. But I can't complain too much. I mean, 9 men against 11, it's not a fair contest. I think it was just one of those games and we lost another game. I think it was lucky that Brighton did draw the game against Cardiff. They could have went top of the table, but that didn't happen. So we are still top of the league, but that's 3 defeats in a row now. And I don't think we deserve to lose 3 games. I thought we were the better team in each of those games. It's a big learning curve for the squad, and it's going to be interesting to see how they react next week.
Jake, I was watching that game, and I just the standard of refereeing, and also kind of Henri Lansbury's, or however you say his name, his behaviour was, pretty diabolical on both those decisions. Just ridiculous, really. Do you? I don't know. I noticed this in the Villa Leeds game on Saturday evening as well. The standard of the refereeing for both teams really seemed to be pretty poor. Is that? Do you think that's? And I'm interested to know in Thomas's view on that. Do you think that's a trend that you're noticing this season in the Championship, or are we just being really grumpy fans?
I think there's definitely an argument that the refereeing in the Championship is maybe a lot lower than the Premier League. There's definitely a significant difference. I've noticed that. There's been a few games this season where the blatant decisions haven't been given either for or against Newcastle, penalties and things like that. It seems on the big decisions, they're very variable in what they give. And it seems with each game, each referee has a different prerogative. Sometimes they're very card happy or they're very happy to give decisions. Others are reluctant to. And there's not that consistency that you get in the Premier League. Do you think that's fair, Thomas? Do you think that there is a difference? I mean, you know the league a lot better than we do.
Yeah. Is that a barbed insult? Is it? I think in the Championship, what you just tend to get is one of those games where a ref will just completely lose the plot, like it was against Newcastle, the Forest game for Newcastle. I think in the Premier League, you get dodgy decisions or a ref that has a few in a game. In the Championship, you just tend to, several times a season, get a game where just refs make diabolical decisions. I mean, last season... 2 seasons back when we played Bournemouth, I remember we had a ref and he gave some absolutely shocking decisions, 2 or 3, sent a couple of players off, and he just lost the plot, lost the control of the game completely. It's difficult to know whether the standards is good or bad. I mean, in our game against QPR, I mean, they were sent down to 10 men. Perch got two bookings, but they were probably about right. And then both teams probably should have had a penalty because there was 2 handballs that the linesman and the ref didn't give. So, I mean, I don't know. I think in the Championship, all the games are a lot tighter and it's a lot much more physical league. So I think you're asking the ref to make a lot more decisions. So I think it's probably harder to referee a Championship game than it probably is to referee a Premier League game in a lot of respects. So I would say that there has been many times a season where I thought the referee could have done better, but I don't know. I wouldn't say it's gone downhill necessarily from recent seasons.
Didn't the Aston Villa Birmingham game get refereed by Mike Dean? Am I right in thinking that?
I can't really remember.
Fair enough. I did think that did happen. It might have done, but if it didn't, then fair enough.
Well, they occasionally get sent down, don't they? That's the punishment for if a referee has a It's quite a funny thing, isn't it, to think, well, the referee had a really shocking game in the Premier League, so we'll go and send him down to referee a really important championship game or something to that effect. It's like we should have to suffer bad refereeing because a ref dropped a clanger in a Premier League game last week. So it's, yeah, it's a, it is an interesting one. But I kind of think no referee goes out to deliberately think I'm going to put one over on a team. So I think you just have to sometimes accept the rough with the smooth, don't you? That you, sometimes you're going to get a bad ref and it's going to cost you, and sometimes you'll get the benefit of the decision. So I don't think it always evens out over the season because some teams always get more bad luck than they get good luck. But I think you've got to be a bit philosophical about it.
Yeah, I do think a lot of the local journalists in Newcastle have spoken about how Rafa Benitez has been slightly surprised by the officiating at this level, and if it, maybe he was a bit more vocal about it. So he hasn't been. He's been very sort of diplomatical about everything. Even after the game on Friday, he didn't criticise the ref too much. He was mainly focusing on Lansbury. So I think it's definitely an issue, but every team has it. Every team's going to have decisions against them and for them. It's going to even itself out to use a football in Cleveland. It's going to happen, so I'm not going to complain too much. I could be here next week talking about how we've been come on the right side of the decision. So, yeah, it's just one of those things you have to deal with. All teams have it. So, it was just very disappointing how two of our players got sent off, and it sort of ruined the game.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But moving on to the topics, both of you have had new managers at your clubs recently, so I just want to talk about both of those. How do you think they've settled in, and do you think they're the right men to take your club to where you want to go? We'll start with you, Thomas, on that. You spoke a bit about Paul Lambert earlier. I just want to know what you thought, what your reaction was when he was appointed, and how do you think he's settled in, both sort of PR-wise and on the pitch as well? Has he made any decisions that have shocked you or brought anybody back in? I just want to hear how he sort of settled in.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, when we spoke after Zenga got the sack, and I said this was the type of manager, it was the profile of the manager that I wanted. I wanted someone who was a serious contender, you know, not someone who was just plucked out of George Mendes's phone book like Walter Zenga was. I wanted someone we'd heard of, someone with championship pedigree, and someone who I felt still had something to offer. And I think Paul Lambert is all of those things. I mean, I know that, you know, he had a struggle at Aston Villa. Matt will probably have his own view on Lambert, which I'd be interested to hear. But I think he's generally got a pretty decent CV. So I was happy when he came down. And then obviously one of the first things he did, because he came during an international break, and like I say, invited a load of us down to the training ground, sat down with us, answered all our questions. And I got a generally good vibe from him. He said he wanted to come and play on the front foot. He wanted us to be getting at teams. Even though most people said we just needed to sort of salvage this car wreck of a season, he was like, no, you know, if we put a run together, this league is, you know, open to anyone, which is right, really. If you do put three or four wins together, like Villa have shown, you can change your perspective of a season. And then we started with a 0-0 at Preston. He put out a pretty defensive-minded team. He immediately promoted one of the youth players straight into the starting lineup. So he made a couple of big statements of intent there. I think he sort of said, well, I'm going to make us much tougher to beat, which we kind of knew he would try to do. And also made a statement with bringing the young lad in up front to say that, you know, the door's open to anyone. We signed 15 players in the summer, but he was happy to just overlook a lot of those players to bring in a youth team player. So it sort of made that statement that nobody's position in the team is safe and everyone's got a chance. So it wasn't spectacular, but a solid point at a decent Preston side who were on a good run. Then we had the disappointment of Sheffield Wednesday's first home game in charge. Again, he put out what looked a very defensive-minded team, which was a bit disappointing because we've got quite a lot of good attacking players. And what I think we were hoping to see from Lambert was to give us that bit of defensive resilience, but also get the best out of the attacking players, Costa, Cavalero, Bodvarsson, players like that. But he didn't start with Cavalero against Sheffield Wednesday. We were 2-0 down fairly quickly and we did very little to try and get back into that game. So that was very disappointing. That was a low point. And we were already looking over our shoulder. And then QPR was obviously, it felt like a big game. It felt like a game we needed to really show something. And Paul Lambert needed to show a bit more. And he picked a much more attacking team. He went for three up front. He played those three players. He played Noah Dicko through the middle, Costa and Cavalero wide. So it was a proper 4-3-3. And after QPR went down to 10 men, those three players really came to the fore and won us the game. So I think that was good because it showed that Lambert was willing to reflect on perhaps mistakes he'd made with the previous team selection and go back to the drawing board and come up with a different plan. So I'm impressed with him because, not many managers will sit down and talk with fans for that long and show a real appetite and really share his ideas. So I do think he's the right man for the job, and I do think he will ultimately do what we need him to do this season. And then it'll just be a case of whether next season we're able to really push on and do something, because that's when the microscope will really be on him.
You did mention Jorge Mendes there. Obviously, with this new sort of, since the takeover at Wolves, there's been a lot of players coming in and things. Do you think that there's a possibility that Lambert might not be given the time he needs at Wolves if things don't go to plan? Because some of these new owners can be a little bit trigger happy, and it could be that if Wolves don't climb out of relegation trouble too soon, the pressure could increase on him quite a lot. And it could be that you have a lot of managers in and out of the club, like we've seen at the Leeds and Blackburn in years gone by. Is that a fear you have, or do you think that he's going to be given the time that he needs to sort of take Wolves where you want to be?
Yeah, I mean, it is a fear, because whenever you've got your own by consortium, it's the kind of decision that tends to get made. But what I would say is the general vibe coming out of Wolves over the sacking of Zenga, bringing in Lambert, is that Fosen, the group that own Wolves, know that they've made mistakes. I think they knew that getting Zenga in and then buying all these players who have no experience of English football or the Championship, that and expecting to immediately be able to mount some kind of promotion tilt was completely unrealistic. So I think they've taken advice from people in the club. Kevin Thelwell, who's the director of football type person at Wolves, he's now seems to have taken more firmer control. He was the one who sort of seemed to headhunt Lambert and put his name forward and say that he would be the right man for us. So I think he will be given time. I think he will be given some money to spend in January, and I think he'll be given some money over the summer. I think as long as we do stay up in any form, even if it ends up being a little bit more of a struggle than we'd like it to be, I think he'll get another go at it, proper go at it next season. He'll have a chance to build his own team, which I think he's right. And when we sat down with him, one of the questions he was asked was, will you be able to dictate the players you want? Will you be able to shape your team? You're not just going to be given more players in January that you don't really want, which is what Zenga had to do. He was just thrown 15 players and said, right, make that work. And Lambert said, yeah, I'll have a say over who's coming in, and I'll be helping identify players. So that bodes well, because I think that's what we need. We need, over the next 1-2 transfer windows, we need Paul Lambert to be saying, these are the players I want. And he talked about proven Championship pedigree. And funnily enough, one of the few players that he actually name-checked was Lansbury at Forest, which is quite funny because he's been in, obviously, he was in the headlines against Newcastle and against Barnsley in another game where that player sent off. We name-checked him as the type of player who could just immediately hit the ground running if he proved to be a target. So I think in January we'll get a few players in. And I think generally with Paul Lambert, I get the feeling we'll be all right this season. So my hopes.
And moving on to Villa now, Matt. Obviously, Steve Bruce is very much a safe pair of hands. He took Hull off last season. He's got a good record in the Championship. He did well at Birmingham, ironically, as well, before. How have you rated him since he's arrived at Aston Villa?
Yeah, he's been brilliant. I've kind of, through my journalistic kind of day-to-day, I've spoken to a few people who, you know, work in and around the club. And even though Di Matteo, you know, his CV looks pretty good. You know, he got, particularly 5 or so years ago, whenever it was, he was in charge of West Brom, got them promoted. You know, so he has that kind of Championship pedigree. But I don't think, or from what I was told anyway, he wasn't the type of person to really go in and kind of shake up a dressing room. Bearing in mind, we've got very similar squad to the squad that performed so, you know, dreadfully in the Premier League last season. And I think that is the main difference with Steve Bruce. He's come in there. He's that kind of respected figure. He's been able to shake up that dressing room and just really give the, you know, the proverbial kick up the arse to some players who really needed it. And so, to be honest, you know, the type of football hasn't really changed that much. It's more so that the players have just been performing a little bit better. And bringing the best out of some of the players who at the start of the season weren't really, really, really performing that well. You know, even a kind of a Jonathan Codger, who is only really kind of, apart from the odd penalty at the start of the season from when he signed, he's really started to perform since Bruce has come in. And I don't really think that's a coincidence. And, you know, as you were kind of alluding to, I think he just knows exactly what it takes to get a club promoted. Although saying that, it's slightly worrying about how he set up against Leeds, because that almost made me think to the contrary to that. You know, he for some reason he kind of tinkered with the formation, put Rudi Gestede up front, having, you know, he hasn't started a game in a long time, didn't seem to quite work. So that kind of gives you, you know, some alarm bells. But, you know, that is the first loss in, I think, kind of 8 or 9 games since he's come in. So you know, the signs are positive. We just, I think if we scrape the playoffs, I think that's probably realistic. I think, you know, you hear some Villa fans getting a bit carried away saying, you know, first or second, automatic promotion and all that. But I think, you know, we'd take sixth now. All day long.
Was it a fear of yours after he was appointed that his past, you know, success with Birmingham would go against him? Because I know Alex McLeish wasn't maybe the most popular man on when he arrived at Aston Villa. Do you think it's the same problem for Bruce, or do you think that that's going to be overlooked? Because he is obviously the type of manager you need to rebuild the club after last season.
The beauty that Steve Bruce has is that he didn't come directly from Birmingham City, which McLeish did, and kind of fans have very, very short memories, and so I think that kind of time away from you know that extended period of, you know, of years in between Villa and Blues kind of didn't make it too much of an issue, unlike kind of McLeish coming directly from Birmingham City, and also, you know, they've played the PR game quite well. With him, you know, saying, you know, he's saying stuff like Aston Villa's the club that, you know, I've been waiting for 20 years and things like that, which, you know, I'm a journalist, so I'm slightly cynical about the whole thing, but that's the kind of thing that the everyday fan wants to hear, isn't it? So I don't think that's too much of an issue. No, I don't think that's a problem.
Moving into the second topic for today, we're now in December. Obviously, we've got a busy Christmas period ahead, but we're going to be looking ahead to the January transfer window now. I just want to know where each of you think your club need to strengthen, and do you have any players that you think maybe could be moved on? We'll start with you, Thomas.
Yeah, well, again, going back to that meeting with Paul Lambert, he said that the squad was too big, basically. I think they've got something like 30, 31 players. He thinks that's too big. He wants to reduce that by about 6-7 bodies, but he also wants to bring in some of his own players. So if we assume he brings in 2 or 3 of his own, we'd be looking to move on like 10 players in January, which is that's a lot of movement. So I think there are a couple of handful of loan players who might be sent back who haven't really featured as much, and some players who sort of hung around a bit longer than their sell-by date. So I think January will be quite a busy month again for Wolves, just like the summer was. I think there's going to be massive fluctuation in the squad. I think the type of players we need to get in another striker. That has to be a priority. Someone of proven championship ilk who can rattle in 10 to 15 goals, hopefully, over the second half of the season for us, because our strikers, unfortunately, for all their qualities, aren't putting the ball in the net, and that's a big problem. So someone like a Jordan Rhodes, for instance, that's whether we could be able to tempt him down from the Premier League to a team struggling at the bottom of the Premier League is another question altogether. But someone of that ilk would be where I think we need to prioritise. And as for the players who moved on, I don't know that I couldn't name that many specifically, you know, who aren't really featuring, but it could be any one of the 10 to 12 players who aren't making the match day squad at the moment. So I won't run down the whole list, but plenty to choose from.
Yeah, I guess you mentioned it there that Paul Lambert will be given some say in terms of targets. I think that during the summer, you brought in a lot of players that hadn't had experience in the championship, but I think you've learned that or at least the owners have learned that can't be done in this league, and that you need to have players that have played in this league and you need that experience. You mentioned Jordan Rhodes there. Is there any other players that you sort of would like to talk about that you'd like to see Wolves bring in any other positions?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see us buying either players from other championship clubs. If we've got all this money, which we supposedly have, it would be nice to go and just prey on some of the teams who perhaps haven't got as much money. So, for instance, Nottingham Forest, they're trying to sell. I don't know whether that sale has gone through or what they're doing, but they seem to be in a bit of bother. So they've got the lad Asamoah Longo up front, and he's scored some goals for them. I'd like to see Wolves go and say to Forest, right, we'll give you 8-9 million quid for him. He scored goals in the Championship whenever he's been anything close to fit, so we'll take him. And then I'd like to see us going to the Premiership clubs and the players who aren't in those teams, who are struggling to get a game, like Jordan Rhodes, and using this money that we've supposedly got to tempt those players down. You know, that's the tactic I'd like to see us pursue. Probably not that likely. That's why I talked about the need to climb the table ahead of January, because if we're 10th or 11th, 3 or 4 points off the playoffs, a player like Jordan Rhodes might think, yeah, we might be able to have a push at this. Whereas if we're a couple of points outside the relegation zone, it puts a different slant on it altogether. So I think that's why this is a kind of a key period for us. But in terms of positions, I just think we need a striker and probably a commanding centre-half, because we've got numbers in most of the positions. We're not short in any areas, but I just think the players we've got, we're just bloated with options and not many of them are any better than the others, and that's the chief problem.
Yeah, moving on to Aston Villa now. Obviously, a lot of money was spent in the summer. You've still got quite a big squad for the Championship, but where do you think that you will strengthen? Because I'm sure Steve Bruce will want to bring some players in. And are there any players that you would like to see let go?
I think we'll definitely see some. I think we'll see another couple of signings coming in. I mean, yeah, you're right. I think we spent best part of 60 million quid already, which is almost hard to believe for a Championship club. the goalkeeping situation is a bit of an issue, but I don't know whether they'll bring someone in. I'd like to think they would. I mean, Gallini's come in for the season. He came in with people saying he's going to be the next Buffon. That's definitely not the case. I can tell you that. And you know, Mark Burns struggled with a couple of injuries this season already. So it does seem to be a little bit weak in that goalkeeping department. But you know, I don't quite know who they would bring in. I think we got a little bit unlucky with. So Richie Delay came in at right back from Leicester in the last transfer window, played a couple of games, and then you know he was out for the season doing his knee in. So I don't know whether maybe there'll be another defender coming in. So I guess, so if I were going to guess whether there'd be a couple of signings coming in, I think it would be either goalkeeping and or in the defensive department. But, you know, we've got a massive squad. There are plenty of, we must have the strongest bench in the Championship. I mean, going into that Leeds game, we had, you know, Jordan Ayew, who we signed, you know, for I think maybe 10 million last season. We had Jack Grealish, probably one of the best young players in the league. And a couple of other, you know, big Championship names, at least, on the bench. So I don't think the size of our squad is an issue. It'd be interesting to see whether people come in for Villa players. I would suggest someone like a Jordan Ayew, who at times doesn't seem interested. I said it on this podcast before, you know, just doesn't, is a great player, but doesn't quite seem motivated for the Championship. Whether, you know, a kind of a lower tier Premier League may come in for a couple of Villa players, that would be interesting, because I don't quite know what would happen in that situation. But I think I think we're lucky in that we have a big squad of decent Championship players. So I think Steve Bruce will be pretty happy with what he inherited.
Yeah, there's one Aston Villa player I'd like to ask you about who I think Premier League clubs could come in for, and that is Jordan Amavi. I don't think that will shock you too much. He's been linked with Liverpool quite a lot. Last season, he did well in the Premier League before his injury, and that may have been why he didn't get a move in the summer. Do you think he's a player that you might lose in January, or do you think that he's going to stay for at least the rest of the season?
It's a good question. He was, I mean, he is a good player, and he got very unlucky. I mean, last season he broke his leg when he was playing for the French under 21s team. So he's got pedigree. I think he's good enough for the Premier League. Definitely, there's some question marks, I would suggest, about him defensively. He's not great in the air, which you can really prey on, and we noticed that against Brighton. A couple of weeks ago, when they were putting big long diagonal balls up against him with, I think it was Glenn Murray, he was beaten every time. But that's partly due to his height, isn't it? You know, he's not the tallest fullback in the world. But going forward, he's brilliant. He's as good as a left winger. So you can whether he could play at the very very top level. Good question. I'd be surprised if he could break into the Liverpool first team. Although saying that, they conceded 4 goals this weekend, so maybe it'd be a good addition. But I think because he's only come back from injury, I would suggest that a Premier League club would be taking a big gamble if they were going to come in for him with any kind of big money, which is what it would require to sign him from Villa at this moment in time.
In terms of Newcastle and their transfer business, I like Villa, we spend a lot of money in the summer, but I'd expect some more business in January for a couple of reasons. One, I think Jonjo Shelvey could be missing for a very, very long time. I'm not sure what's going on with his sort of stuff that's going on with Wolves as well. Thomas, you might know a bit more about this, but the racism sort of thing that's going on, I think he's probably going to get a ban for that from what I've read. He's going to be missing...
There must be some sort of evidence to substantiate the claim. I'm guessing it's not just because apparently the Romans say the player who supposedly abused, and he wasn't even aware he'd been abused. It was some of the other Wolves players. And obviously grassed him in after the game. So, but I'm guessing there must be some evidence. Just if it's just his word, if it's just a couple of the players' words against Jonjo Shelvey's, I can't see it seeing the light of day because, I mean, John Terry got done for it, but he was basically caught on video camera saying something, and then you had various testimonies. So my guess is that he'll get a fine and a slap on the wrist. That would be my best guess of the outcome.
That would be positive for Newcastle, but from what I've read, it seems to be Shelvey has a witness, the Wolves player has a witness, and it's sort of going to be, you know, one word against the other. I don't know what's going to come of it, but if he does get banned, it's going to create quite a problem for Newcastle because he is our most important player. And I would go as far as to say on his day, he's the best player in the Championship. He can run games. He was running that game for half an hour at the weekend and then he got sent off. But I think if he does get a substantial ban, then we're going to have to bring in somebody who can play a similar role because we have nobody in the squad that can do that at the moment. I think a creative midfielder is something that we need. Maybe not one that can be a regular first team player, because I think that's Shelby, but maybe somebody like a Connor Horahan from Barnsley, I think we've been linked to. He'd be quite a good addition. I think he's got 6 months left on his contract that's running down. There's going to be a lot of clubs in for him, and surely Barnsley will want to get some sort of fee and not let him go on a free, because he's quite a talented player. So somebody like that would be quite good, just to give us a bit of extra squad depth in that role in particular. And we've got quite a few players going to the African Cup of Nations. I think we've got 4 or 5. Mo Diame is one of them. So I think, again, that shows that we're going to need another body in central midfield over the course of January, at least. So that's a position I expect us to strengthen. I expect Rafa to probably bring in 2 or 3. He might do so with a view to next season. Players that can push on in the Premier League, and maybe not so... not starters this season, but players that you think will be more suited to the Premier League, and get them in for 6 months and get them adjusted to the squad and things like that. So I expect us to bring in 2 or 3. A midfield is definitely one of them. I think a striker as well. Mitrovic has been linked with a move away, and he might go. So if he does go, we're going to need to bring somebody in to sort of compete with Dwight Gayle, because I don't think Daryl Murphy's going to be that man in the long term. I think he's more for this season rather than next. So I'd quite like to see us bring in a striker. And in terms of players leaving, I think Cheick Tiote probably has to leave. He nearly left in the summer. He's not really played a part this season. He's going to go to the Africa Cup of Nations. So maybe he's not going to leave in January, but he's what I'd like to see leave. And I'd like to see Matt Sells, the goalie we brought in the summer. I'd like to see him leave in January, even if it's just a temporary move. We got Carl Darlow. He's not going to be shifted from that number one spot. We've got Rob Elliott coming back from injury. I don't think we really need Matt Sells. I think a move away would be good for him to build his confidence back up and maybe come and compete next season if we do get back into the Premier League, because I think the Championship hasn't suited his game at all. He struggled with the physicality. He's been at fault for a lot of goals. So I think maybe a temporary move back to Belgium might be a good thing for him. So he's a player I'd like to see leave on loan. But yeah, I expect us to do a bit of business. But just moving into player watch now, just like to talk about a player that impressed and disappointed in your most recent fixture. We'll start with you, Thomas. So who played well and who disappointed for Wolves this week?
Let me think. I think the standout player for Wolves was probably Helder Costa, the winger. He's been our shining light this season. Him and Dave Edwards have been the ones who've been making the meaningful contributions in the final third for us. And it was him and Edwards again against QPR. But we were 1-0 up, and we knew that if we didn't get the second, QPR were always likely to score. And they did end up getting that goal at the end. So that second goal was all important. He received a cross-field pass out wide, instant control, beat about 3 or 4 players and drilled in the second goal. So that kind of quality is what we desperately, desperately needed. So he effectively won us that game, I think. So he's the one we need. Unfortunately, we've only got him on loan from Benfica until the end of the season. So I don't think whatever happens to us, he'll be hanging around, because someone will have seen enough in him to take a chance on him, even if it ends up being Benfica getting him back. So that'll be a shame, but hopefully while we've still got him, we can make the most of him. On the poor side, I will be picky and go for Cavalero on the other wing, because this guy was our record signing. I think we paid something like 7 to 8 million quid for him in the summer, and he just doesn't... He shows glimpses of brilliance, and you can see that there's a player in there, but his end product is too often lacking. He's too hit and miss. A lot of Wolves fans are saying he hasn't had a sustained run in the side, which is possibly a fair point, but unfortunately in the glimpses he's shown or the games he has started, he hasn't quite done enough to keep justifying his place. But he got a start at Loftus Road and he did okay, but he was very hit and miss, whereas Costa was far more dangerous, far more threatening and direct, and that's what we need from Cavalero. So he should get a chance in the next few games to stake a real claim, and I think getting more out of him could be the difference between continued struggles and climbing the table.
Moving on to Villa, who played well and who disappointed for Steve Bruce's men this week?
Jack Grealish, a lot has been said about him, and you know I've said a lot about him on this podcast over the months,
But just to reiterate what I said before, yeah, Villa are a very, very different team when he plays. You know, he's very, very comfortable on the ball. He makes things happen. He can take the ball from the centre circle to the attackers or to the opposition box quickly, taking players out of the game. And you saw that when he came on against Leeds. We became the attacking force that we should have been from the kickoff. So he's impressed. I mean, I think Steve Bruce said that the reason he didn't start against Leeds was due to they said that on the commentary. I haven't looked into it too much, but they said it was he had a had an in, some training ground incident with Mark Bunn, our goalkeeper, which put actually Bunn out of the match day squad and Grealish on the bench. So I don't quite know what that was, and maybe he'd been suffering with some kind of stomach issue or flu or some kind of cold. So that was but if he's fit, he needs to start for Villa. There's no question about that. He's easily the difference between winning and losing for Villa this season. So he's impressed, and he was great when he came on against Leeds, but just wasn't given enough time to make a difference when we were 1-0 down, 1-0 down when he came on. In terms of players who need to try harder, need to maybe not on the team, it just comes back to. Sorry, this is my slight bugbear, but yeah, Pierluigi Gallini, he looks dodgy from crosses. He doesn't look comfortable taking crosses. He's seems to be a decent. This is funny. This cliche we say is a good shot stopper, of which he is, but I don't think that's quite enough to be a good goalkeeper or a top class goalkeeper these days. You need to have that all around game, and being a good shot stopper and not being able to take crosses, I just think that's not it's not good enough these days. So he's been disappointing, and the first Leeds goal on the weekend, was a cross he came and should have got. He just got beaten to it. And the second goal, even though it was in the 90 plus whatever minute, he just went under his body. Should have saved it. Not that I'm saying his saves lost us the game, but he's made a few mistakes this season, and history seems to be repeating itself too much. So Gallini and Grealish, the two ends of the spectrum, I'd say.
For Newcastle, the player that impressed probably won't be too much of a surprise, but it was Carl Darlow. He was returning to his old club. It was a big match for him, and he played very well. He made some very good saves. He obviously saved two penalties from two different players. When the situation, you could have been forgiven for losing his head. A lot of Newcastle players could have, but he sort of stayed in it, stayed focused, and saved both penalties and kept us in the game in the first half. Which he's been one of our most improved players this season. He started off as our number two. He's worked his way into the first team, and since he's got into the first team, he's been excellent. I think he could be the long-term number one for Newcastle. I was reading an article on him earlier where one of the local journalists said that Benitez wasn't convinced by him when he joined, and obviously he's worked very hard, and now he's the number one, and he deserves a lot of credit. So he's probably the person who impressed most in that fixture, although everybody worked so hard, and there wasn't anybody that played badly, or at least those that stayed on the pitch. No one played badly. It was just one of those games. The person that disappointed, I've talked about him in a positive way a lot this season, but it has to be Jonjo Shelvey. He was running that game for the first half an hour. Nottingham Forest couldn't get close to him. And when he's in that mood, he's just unplayable. But then he also has that streak in him where he can do something out of the ordinary, something ridiculous to sort of ruin that. And I think that's why he's at Newcastle and not at a bigger Premier League club, because at the age of 24, he's got the ability to go so far in this game, but he's just got that streak that stops him from doing so. And that showed against Nottingham Forest. He was provoked by Henry Lansbury. It wasn't all Shelvey, but he should have known better than to react. He gave the referee a decision to make, and he made it. That was the beginning of Newcastle sort of going downhill, and he put us at a disadvantage, which got disadvantaged further by Paul Dummett. But it was Shelvey that started that, and I think he's the main reason we that happened. So he needs to learn to temper to manage his temper a lot better. I think working with Benitez is only going to be a good thing for him, but it just reminded us why there's still those doubts about John Joe Shelvey, and he needs to work on that, and it was slightly disappointing. But moving on to next week now, we've all got matches, big matches for all of us all at home. We'll start with you, Thomas. You got a home match against Fulham, which I guess is going to be a good barometer of where you are at the moment, because they were coming in with a 5-0 win after I'll completely go again on that. Moving on to match previews now. We've all got home matches next weekend. We'll start with you, Thomas. A match against Fulham. Obviously, that's going to be a good barometer of where you are at the moment after their impressive victory over Reading. How do you see that one going?
I look at it and think it's a good fixture for Wolves right now. I think Fulham, just even though they picked up this season, they're still quite an erratic team. They're the kind of team that will go and beat someone 5-0 one weekend and then lose to a crappy team like us down the bottom the next week. So I think that the timing of the fixture is quite nice, but then we could still get slapped if we don't turn up. So I think it's a good opportunity for us. Impossible to say how it will go, because I think Wolves are capable of brilliance and complete catastrophe. So I don't really have a strong view on how it will pan out. But I think we need to get the wins. Like you said, you read out our fixtures for December, and there are a lot of winnable games, particularly at home. And we've been so poor at home this season, it's been untrue. I think teams always enjoy playing at Molineux. It's a big pitch. They seem to thrive on it. So it's always difficult for us. But I think this season we haven't really got at it. We haven't used the attributes we have got effectively. We haven't got our best players into the game at home. I think some of the team selections have been pretty poor. So I'm just hoping that Paul Lambert sticks with primarily the team that beat QPR, and that team get out and play on the front foot and use the confidence from the victory against QPR to go and really put in a positive result. Because now is the time for a couple of back-to-back wins to get us up to more towards that clutch of teams in mid-table. So high hopes. How it will go, if you're asking me for a prediction, I think we might edge a very, very narrow win, something like 2-1, just because a law of averages says we've lost four games, home games in a row. Surely we can't lose five in a row. So, on that basis, I'm thinking we're due a performance. I think we might get one.
And Matt, Aston Villa have got a home game against Wigan. They're obviously second bottom in the table right now, so I'm guessing you're expecting a win in this one.
Yeah, I think everyone is. And to be honest, I think we need to. We haven't quite had a result yet where we've spanked a team, which I think is coming at some point. Even Rotherham, we weren't that convincing, although that was at the start of the season where we weren't. Before we were going on this run. Wigan, we're at home. Our home form seems to be good. As long as everyone's fit, Grealish starts, Codger's firing, we definitely at least a win, but I think we'll all be looking for, a 2-3 goal margin. But you know what it's like in the Championship. We'll take a win regardless of the margin, but hopefully a comfortable home win. And if that doesn't happen, you can all take the mick out of me on Twitter. not too soon after.
Yeah, Newcastle have got a home game against Birmingham, so it's not the easiest game. They're in the playoff positions. I know they lost at the weekend against Barnsley, but they've been doing relatively well this season, and I think a genuine contender for a playoff spot. So it's going to be a tough game, especially as we're coming in on off the back of three defeats. We're definitely going to be there to be got at. The crowd might get a bit frustrated if we don't get that early goal, and without Shelvey as well, we're going to have to sort of rejig our formation, maybe bring in somebody else in to play that role, and I'm not sure we have anybody too suited to that. So it's going to be interesting. I do think we're going to win this game, though. I think I can't see us going four games without four games defeats anyway. And I think I think we're going to get that win. I don't think it's going to be an entertaining game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of goals, but I can see us nicking it. Maybe Dwight Gayle getting back to scoring ways and we'll get that win. I think it's very important to get the win. I don't think we can have another weekend without a win. I think there's already fans grown a little bit discontented on Twitter, which I think is a bit ridiculous. We just won 9 games on the spin before this. We're going to get defeats in this league, and I don't think we're really to blame for the one last week. So I think we're going to win it. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I don't think it's going to be a game for the neutral, but I think we'll get the 3 points and get our promotion push back on the right track. So, yeah, I'll say a Newcastle win. But with that, we are now out of time. So if you would like to tell people where they can reach you or anything you're involved in, now would be a good time.
Yeah, as I said at the start, my name's Thomas, and you can get me at Wolvesblog on Twitter or at facebook.com/Wolvesblog or directly on my website, which is wolvesblog.com.
Yeah, the best place for me is Twitter. My personal account is at Matty Cutler, or my podcast, the SB Weekly podcast, is at SB Weekly Podcast. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you can get my Twitter at Jake Jackman with 2 N's. I wrote for EPL Index and The Boot Room, among various other sites. So if you give me a follow on Twitter, you'll see everything I write on there. And just thank you, everybody, for listening. And we hope you join us again soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.